Welcome to the Mayor's Memes podcast, hosted by Mayor
and Yitzchak.
As we always say, Mayor's Memes is more than a status, it's an experience. So another part of the awesome Mayor's Memes experience is this new fun podcast. On this podcast, we dive into the Jewish WhatsApp world to interview some of its influencers and uncover a little bit about their personalities.
On this episode of the Mayor's Memes podcast by Yaakov Klein. Yaakov is the author of three books, including his newly released Peirush on Rabbi Nachman's story, The Lost Princess, titled The Story of Our Lives. He directs the Lost Princess Initiative, an organization devoted to the spreading of messages of this book in a variety of mediums, including the website, lpitorah.org. He has prints, he has shurim, he has a WhatsApp broadcast and status. So how are you doing, Yaakov?
Chazei Hashem, amazing. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you.
Right, we're really excited to have you on. Okay, so we try to ask an icebreaker at the beginning of each podcast. Everyone knows this is the same way I say it every time. We try to ask an icebreaker at the beginning of each interview to get comfortable with the guest and get into a little bit of talkative mood. So if you could sit down and have a 10-minute conversation with anyone who is currently living, who would that be and why?
Wow, what a question. What a question. That's a very, very interesting. It's an interesting question before I get to the answer. It's an interesting question because in the Jewish world, you know, pretty much if you're a spiritually oriented person, any person that you would want to spend 10 minutes with, you pretty much can. Like, you know, in the secular world, okay, you know, people you can't really reach, you know, but Baruch Hashem, in the firm world, we're blessed with the ability to really sit with pretty much anybody, from Rabbanim to musicians. You know, where there's a will, there's a way. So it's a pretty interesting question. If the question would be, you know, throughout all time, you know, that would be an interesting one.
Definitely,
I think we could guess if it would be throughout all time.
Go for it.
I would say Rabbi Nachman.
That's not a bad guess. I'll say that's pretty accurate.
But that's why we want to try to keep it interesting with the currently living.
Right. Currently living. Yeah. So it's a tough one. You know, it's a tough one with regard to, you know, to the conversational aspect of it. If I could sit with somebody for 10 minutes and speak, I think, you know, the hardest, I would say, conceptual conversation that I could have with someone for 10 minutes is with my 2-year-old son. And I've only been successful to secure like a minute conversation with him. And if I could really sit with him and talk for 10 minutes, that would be just remarkable. That would be remarkable to hear his perspective on the world, you know, from that purity, that innocence, that sweetness, that straight from heaven goodness. You know, I would love 10 minutes of that for sure.
That's so
that's something. Yeah, that's a wholesome answer.
Wow.
It kind of came out of, it came right, nobody would have expected that. Wow.
You made a very good point, though, in the beginning, that I think that the gedolim of the gedolim of Klal Yisrael, maybe as opposed to like secular celebrities, like I think try and be accessible. And
that's right.
I think that's a big value. Message.
That's right. That's a huge thing, because if you think about it today, unlike in previous generations, you could have a gadol adar, you know, who was living someplace in Europe. And the only access to him really, you know, in a certain sense, just because of the difficulty of travel and so on, was the people that were living, you know, around him in that neighborhood and that place, you know. But today, anybody could hop on a plane and within the period of one day, even less, could be literally standing at the door of Rav Chaim Kanievsky. You might have a hard time getting in.
Nowadays it's become not even a plane. Nowadays you could have Zoom calls. We have Zoom calls with different gedolim. Nowadays we have
Shigurim. Also true.
Access.
I haven't yet seen a Zoom call to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, but you never know.
You never know, right? Right. So beautiful. So we wanted we like to try to, now that the crowd sees a lot about you. Not usually we say, okay, you see, we'll see a little bit about a person's personality, but we see a lot from your personality from how you answered. So can you tell the audience a little bit about your personal life, who you are, what you've done in your life?
Sure. So, it's also a funny question because my story's just beginning. You know, you catch me at the very, very first blossoming Be'ezer Hashem. I hope, you know, to spend the rest of my life continuing to grow and to and to flourish. B'siyata d'shmaya, ben adam l'makom, ben adam l'chaveru, ben adam l'atzmi, most importantly. But I'm originally from Farakwe, New York, and I went to a number of wonderful yeshivas in that area, in America, in various places. I was in about 3 or 4 different yeshivas through elementary school and high school. So I got to know a lot of people, and I got to experience a lot of different hashkafic approaches at different points. And I came to Eretz Yisrael at age 17 to learn in a small yeshiva that's no longer around called Shari Tivuna a number of years ago. And I was here also in Eretz Yisrael. I was in 3 different yeshivas, so I got to know a whole lot more people. And also to get to experience a little bit more in the way of not just, you know, in terms of the yeshivas hashkafas, but in general, you know, Shabbos meals and getting to go to Tzfat and getting to go to other places and experiencing different streams of thought and different approaches to Hashem and to the Torah and to Am Yisrael. And, you know, there was a nagging feeling throughout my childhood and growing up in yeshiva that even though these are wonderful, wonderful institutions, you know, and tremendous, tremendous bastions of Torah study and education, but I just felt somewhere deep down that something was missing. You know, I always felt very uncomfortable with the focus on externalities and some aspects of, you know, or some areas in the firm world, you know, and there was just a certain sense that the societal atmosphere within our communities and within our schools was obscuring something very, very deep and something very gentle and nuanced that wasn't always there, you know, and that pained me and that hurt me because I had an innate and inherent feeling that there was more to Yiddishkeit, you know, than what I was being given and what our communities were engaged with, you know. And slowly but surely over the years, I'm not gonna, you know, bore you now with the whole long story in the Hishtalshelus of how this came about. But eventually at some point I discovered on a personal level, even though, you know, from my background, from my family, my father is associated with Breslov. And so I definitely grew up, you know, with a connection to Rabbi Nachman and a connection to Tzaddik and Bechlal and their importance and the importance of their teachings. But later on a personal level, I did, you know, a very, very deep dive into that hashkafa and into that approach. And almost immediately, I found in the teachings of Hasidus and of other Sfarim that treat the inner light of Torah and that are trying to give us a lens, you know, into the neshama, into the soul of our Judaism beyond the societal sort of engagement, you know, which can many times become rote and many times robotic. But I felt that looking into that lens, I saw myself, you know, in a mirror reflection, you know, and I really felt at that moment that I had found what I was looking for. And in a certain way, I felt that I had been deprived. I felt that there was an area of Torah, particularly, you know, in the agadic sections of Chazal, Gemaras, that in Yeshiva we either skipped or glossed over, or, you know, was considered the dessert or something that wasn't as important, you know, to dive into as much as the rigorous, you know, and more intellectual halachic aspects of our educational system. And I felt that I'd been robbed in a certain way. Growing up a regular frum Jew, you know, Baruch Hashem, you know, like I mentioned before, went to wonderful, wonderful yeshivas, and I just felt that that it's very, very important for our generation that's experiencing a lot of difficulties and a lot of problems and a lot of struggles. You know, the Alfa Derech problem is obviously very big. You know, the impact that we have, or that secular society has had around us and infiltrated slowly but surely into even the most from aspects of our communities, you know, has been devastating in certain aspects. You know, talking in shul is a problem, tznius issues, divorce issues, shalom bias problems, etc. It's a mental health issues, etc. You know, and it just became very, very clear to me as I was engaging with this approach to Avodas Hashem that was really more Hashem focused, you know, and framed Avodas Hashem as a relationship as opposed to, you know, a technical obligation or some kind of chore. I realized, and I believe very deeply that all of our problems are really symptoms of something underlying. And if we can fix that, then that will naturally have an impact on all of these other areas and fix a lot of the problems. If we change our perspective, if we change our approach, if we change our way of looking at each other, if we change our way of looking at ourselves, and at the Torah and Hashem, obviously rooted in our tradition from the Baal Shem HaKadosh, who really, you know, didn't feel that he came to reveal anything new, but just to return Judaism back to what it was, you know, to what it had always been. And throughout the ages, we forgot. We forgot that David HaMelech spirit of Tehillim, of free-flowing spontaneity in our Avodas Hashem. Yiddishkeit is a love affair, Shir HaShirim, you know, and that Agadic segment of the Torah that's connected to Har HaBayis, that's connected to Tefillah, that's connected to Emunah, that's connected to inwardness and depth and humility and sincerity. The Baal Shem just felt that he was bringing that back. And I feel very deeply that if we were to re-engage with the original spirit of Hasidus, you know, not necessarily what it's become today. A lot of Hasidus today is more institutionalized than other segments of the community, you know, in an ironic way. And that's why I try to maintain, you know, my Litvish dress and living in, you know, the same community as everybody else and going in the same circles as everybody else, because that's not the important stuff. The important stuff is the inside. And I've devoted my life through my books and through Shiurim and through other avenues of creativity, through music, Mechazei Hashem, to try to spread these messages as often and as loudly as I possibly can. And Mechazei Hashem, there's a tremendous movement. You know, Mechazei Hashem, I'm connected with a lot of guys here in Eretz Yisrael, where I live, or in many, many yeshivas. There's not one yeshiva, mainstream, normal places from across the spectrum, you know, all the way to the right and all the way to the left. Every yeshiva has a pocket of guys that's discovered this, and they're the most vibrant and full of vitality and full of excitement and passionate and the happiest. And, you know, I really do believe that this is the next train station for Am Yisrael, and hopefully the last that will bring us to Mashiach.
Right.
That, this is on a more like individual, personal level about your journey. Was there like a moment or a specific incident in your childhood where you saw this, something was happening and something specific was happening and it made you think like maybe something's a little bit off here, we're missing something?
There were certain things. There were, so, you know, I always have to walk the delicate line, you know, between trying to be for what I'm for, you know, but chas v'shalom not in a way to be against anything else. That's a very delicate thing. You know, when you're trying to bring about a change of some sort or an improvement or a transformation, you know, it's very, very important to try to stay away from doing that, you know, by being negative, because it's so easy to be negative and it's so easy to criticize. Anybody can criticize it. Any one of us, you know, can just write a whole litany of all of our complaints, you know, against the front community. There's no chiddush to that. Everybody can do that. The chiddush is, you know, to be able to come with a solution, you know, that's so beautiful and that's so strong that it's clear that, you know, that this is the next thing. So, you know, it's not my nature, you know, to try to dafka speak about those, you know, the negative things, you know, although a few come to mind. But I would say just in a more general sense, I think, you know, focus on levush, for example, a certain dress, you know, as if this is like the most important thing, as if, you know, this is what Hashem came down on our Sinai. And instead of saying, Anochi Hashem Lekecha, he said, you know, everybody has to wear, you know, black pants and a white shirt and a hat by davening and this kind of yarmulke and this kind of tzitzis in, tzitzis out. And I just felt like, is this really what my grandparents died in Auschwitz for? You know, it can't be. There's got to be something more to our story. And, you know, there were many other things as well. But this was, like I said, you know, many, many of the problems that we face are at the root a result of a very shallow kind of thinking about Hashem, about the Torah, and about each other. And that's something that I, you know, strive for myself to always grow, you know, and I never want, you know, to give off the impression like I'm there and I figured it out. You know, I'm just like everybody else. I'm striving, I'm trying as best as I can, but I do feel, you know, that holding onto the tzaddikim and following the guidance that Hashem has gifted us, you know, in the medium of their writings and their teachings and their example, I think that it can bring us to a wonderful place.
Right. So on what you were saying before, how so, some of Hasidus nowadays has become more of a thing based on traditions rather than filled with meaning. A certain mentor of mine often says this. So a question is, how do we, with the resurgence of a feeling of Hasidus within the world, you see it clear, you can clearly see it. How do we keep from this happening again?
It's an excellent question. I would say that I think talking about it and realizing, learning from example of really just exclusively trying to push quality over quantity, which is a very, very, you know, strong and foundational principle, you know, set forth in my book that just came out, Chazi Hashem, on Rabbi Nachman's story, The Lost Princess, where we focus a lot on these two concepts, these two approaches. You know, there's an approach of quantity, which cares a lot about dress and cares a lot about behavior and then hugging and you know, very specific modes of being. And that's quantitative in the sense that the reason why an institute or the reason why a movement would want to introduce such a thing is because we want to make sure that there's something we can automatically give over to our kids. There's a chinuch to be mechanech them, you know, that before they know anything, they already look like the parents, they already dress like the parents, they speak like the parents, they live, etc., you know. And so that's a way of maintaining quantity. What oftentimes happens, though, is that the fire, because so much of the focus is put on quantity, slowly but surely we forget like what we're trying to protect, you know. There's a story about that comes to mind. I don't think we have enough time for it, but maybe at a different point we'll have a longer meeting. But I think that talking about it, and I think that reminding each other all the time that the ikkar is the quality. The ikkar, you know, we can't lose sight of the focus, and you know, to really deeply engage with the teachings of Hasidus more so than, you know, the external trappings of it. You know, so Baruch Hashem, I've been zochet to teach in a number of capacities, and most recently Mevaseret Tzion. And you know, guys sometimes come to me and ask me, you know, like, should I put on a gartel? Is it time to grow payas, and so on and so forth? And I try, you know, not to tell people what to do, but what I always remind them is, you know, always be mindful of the ikkar. Always be mindful of the ikkar. The main thing is the main thing. And the main thing is really setting aside time each and every day to try to engage in some way, either if you're good with Hebrew reading, to try to open a sefer, Kedusha Slavi, Nesiva Shalom, even Nefesh HaChaim, you know, which is a decidedly non-Hasidic sefer. But if a person were to learn that sefer, not in the way that it's learned in the yeshivas, where they learn the fourth shar, you know, which obviously speaks about Liman HaTorah, and they forget about, you know, the second shar, which is Tefillah, and the third shar, which is Hashem, and the first shar, which, you know, talks about the inner spiritual greatness of man. If we would really put time every single day into engaging with the deeper elements of our tradition and forget, you know, all the quantitative external things and realize that it's not about that, you know, and it's about an inner journey, I think that we'd manage to maintain it. You know, part of the reason why these communities look the way they do is because oftentimes, in a crazy way, they were impacted by the pushback against Hasidus to the point that in their yeshivas, the curriculum doesn't look that much different, you know, than in a yeshivish yeshiva. They're also learning Iyun for many hours a day, second Seder's Bekiyas. When do they have time, you know, to delve into the thousands of pages that are decidedly not that kind of limud and are still Liman HaTorah to the same degree? You know, a lot of people think Hasidus is dessert, you know, or Hasidus is some sort of fluffy thing, you know, and we have to remember the main thing is Liman HaTorah. What do you think Hasidus is? Hasidus is the deepest Liman HaTorah. It's the same, right? The Nevesh HaChaim says that every single aspect of Torah has the same Kedusha like anything else. And he says that explicitly about Agada, that a person shouldn't think that learning the stories in Medrash, learning the stories in the Gemara, in Yerushalmi, in Midrashim, that that's any less, you know? And so what happened was is that Hasidus, or many, many of the Hasidic, you know, courts, really pulled back from engaging deeply on a consistent basis with the teachings of the forebears of that movement upon which that movement was supposed to be based. You know, and nowadays I knew more sitting in the Mir Yeshiva, believe it or not, me, little Litvak Yaakov Klein from Farakaway, about the Baal Shem Tov and about the Talmidei HaMagid, then many of the Hasidim in my share would go to them and talk to them. They Pashit knew nothing. And that's not to say that all of them know nothing. I don't like generalizing either. You know, every person is an individual, and there were many that knew, and there are many that didn't know, and so on and so forth. And also, this is not to say that there aren't thousands of Hasidim that are bursting with this feeling. You know, but if we have to generalize just to make things a little bit simpler, I would say that that has a lot to do with it, which, by the way, is really why Breslov and Chabad are the two strongest and most vocal movements, you know, within Hasidus today that are having the biggest impact, that are most public and most popular, because those two movements never at any period stopped engaging deeply on a daily basis, on a substantive quality plus quantity level with the qualitative aspects of what those chassidusim were, which is an approach to Avodas Hashem. And they have svarim that they learn deeply. That in Breslov Yeshivas, they devote hours a day to these kind of limudim. And in my opinion, that's really the way to try to stay away, you know, from having that same thing that happened to the first wave of chassidus, so to speak, to happen again.
Interesting you mentioned Chabad. We actually had on, I think maybe the third episode was Yossi Farrow. And what's interesting,
a real Chabad.
Yeah, and he was also, I'm getting the similar impression. He was like you were saying, he was similarly bursting with passion. And he was talking about his episodes in like being Makariv. And it was similarly like passionate. It's interesting that you make that comparison.
That's right. I mean, listen, anybody with eyes can see this. Anybody, you know, you ask people today, like, you know, what comes to your mind? You know, when you think of Chassidus as Chassidus, you know, not as Chassidish, but when you think of Chassidus, most people still don't even know what that is. You know, like, what's Chassidus? You know, we don't even know what the difference is. Because it's become so blended, you know. But people are going to say Chabad and Breslov. You know, these are the two schools of thought, you know, that are having that sort of impact.
You have to be able to separate Haimish from Chassidish.
That's also true. Yeah.
Right. So it's also true. So now, try to get a little bit more on the path of the podcast. We've heard a really amazing things from you so far, Yaakov. How do you get into like the whatever we like to call it the Jewish WhatsApp world, but you're really much past there already. So how do you get there? What do you do there?
And specifically about LPI.
Right, right. So listen, one of the things, you know, about LPI is that it's really not a, you know, predominantly a WhatsApp status or a WhatsApp group. That's one facet of something that's very, very, very multifaceted and something that's, you know, much bigger than that, even though that's wonderful. All the people that are doing that stuff is great, you guys included, you know, and it's everybody's trying to bring meaning to the world in their own way. What's unique about LPI is that it's really layers and layers and layers that are all ultimately founded on the core of this hashkafic sort of approach that's all wrapped up into this book. You know, so this book, which is a 512-page book written on a page and a half of a story in Rabbi Nachman's Sipuri Maaseis. This was the first story that he told, a story about a princess who gets lost, and the viceroy, the second in command of the king, spends his entire life trying to search for her and trying to withstand all the different obstacles that he has and try to fulfill the conditions that she gives him in order to be able to free her. And ultimately, he manages to hold on to these conditions for a whole year. And then on the last day of the year that he's supposed to go and free her, he slips and he's not able to, you know, to withstand one of the temptations. And this happens again. And there are many various obstacles that he has to go through. And the book is really an in-depth treatment, you know, of the spiritual journey with all of the ups and many of the downs, you know, and to try to really reframe our understanding of failure and of sin, you know. And these are things that nobody likes speaking about, you know, but the Pasuk already gives us Eidus, Ein Tzadik V'aretz Asher Yaseh Tov Le'Yechta. There's no person who's perfect, right? And this is a part of our lives and a major part of our lives, certainly in our generation, right before the coming of Mashiach, when the Yitzhar is the strongest and the accessibility, you know, is you know, to impurity and to lowliness and you know, filth, Kipshuta, is much, much, much bigger than it's ever been, you know, imagined to even being able to grow. So this is very, very important, you know, to really understand, like, what is this journey? How do we look at failure? How do we look at yearning? How do we look at the utility, you know, of missteps in Avodas Hashem, you know, and to try to reframe our entire engagement with Yiddishkeit as a search for something that we're trying to tap into, something deeper, something that we call, you know, which is the princess. The metaphor is the spirit of youthful wonder and the spirit of youthful excitement and innocence and sincerity and depth that I mentioned at the beginning of the recording, you know, of being able to sit down with my son for 10 minutes. And it sounds cute, but I really mean it. I learn a tremendous amount from him. You know, that natural excitement and that natural wonder over the things in life that we become so, so, um, so used to, you know, and we take them for granted. In Yiddishkeit particularly, you look at a bar mitzvah boy, the first time he puts on tefillin, he can't sleep the night before, and it's the most exciting thing in the world. And then already a couple of weeks later, it's the princess is gone, right? And that's what happens to us in every stage in life. And the princess is gone from parent and child relationships, and the princess is lost from marriages, and the princess is lost from passions and ambitions and dreams and, you know, visions. So the book is about the search to reclaim. That's the subtitle is an epic quest to reclaim the soul of our tradition. You know, that's what it's all about. And so that's the book which sits at the core of it. And on top of the book, I would say the next level is a 7-week webinar course, which Be'ezer Hashem, the first cycle of which is beginning February 7th. Registration is already closed for that. But Be'ezer Hashem, if people are interested, you know, in the next cycle, they can check out our website, which I'll also speak about. But that's the second thing is the 7-week course, which basically takes the book and really unpacks it in a very, very deep and unique way. To be able to read the entire book, all 512 pages of this sefer and this work, throughout the 7 weeks of the course together with all of these chevra from all around the world made accessible. We talked about that also through Zoom, you know, for all these people, Baruch Hashem, we have 40 Jews from 6 countries and so many states throughout the United States, all over the world, all ages, all backgrounds, who are going to be taking this journey, Be'ezer Hashem, over 7 weeks. There are 2 Zoom meetings every week on Sundays and on Wednesdays. And the subject of those meetings, in addition to reading the book, you know, together with assigned readings, so that we come into the Zoom meetings having read the chapters, all of us together, holding in the sugya, holding in that inyan, is to really go through a curricular workbook that B'chazei Hashem was zocha to create, along with a lot of siyata d'shmaya, all based on the content in the book, to really enable people to go like 5 steps deeper. All the Hebrew sources that are brought in the book in translated form are brought in their original. We're going to learn all the Maror Mekomos inside together, the words of the tzaddikim. Everything is brought with an interlinear translation. There are questions for reflection and exercises and discussion points and tefillos to be able to daven up when we finish learning about something. So then the end of the session is to be able to say a special, unique tefillah, to be able to try to put that into practice, as well as many other aspects of this course, chavrusas and you know, obviously questions and discussion, to really delve very, very deep, you know, into the content in the book, into the story, into the hashkafic approach that's really, in a certain way, you know, it's not just like another book. I know every author says that about every book, but even I, as having written other books, I can say that this is, it's something else. It's something else because it's really a textbook, you know, to really try to understand what it is, everything that I've been speaking about and everything that's been happening and this momentum, this hashkafa, what is it? What was the Baal Shem Tov's chiddush? What did he come to bring to the world? And that's really the subject of the book, and that's the subject of the course. It's called the Lost Princess Principles Course because there are 25 principles which are core foundational, you know, ideas that really sit at the heart of the Hasidic revolution and revelation from the Baal Shem HaKadosh that are extracted from the book. These are the basic themes in the book, each of which, you know, every week we introduce 1, 2, 3, a few of these 25 principles split among the 14 Zoom sessions that we have over 7 weeks. And that's the ikkar. You know, you walk away with a 25-point foundation of foundations for your ashkafa to be able to build on, to be able to have clarity, to be able to understand what is our mission in the world, how to reframe every aspect of our journey toward HaKadosh Baruch Hu's loving arms in the perspective of that relationship and in the perspective of trying to reclaim, which itself, you know, is obviously founded on the concepts of humility and feeling as if we don't have and as if we're not settled and, you know, we're not just Jews because that's what we were born in to do and, you know, going with the system by road and just doing what we're supposed to do, but it's an adventure, it's an epic search. So that's the principles program. One of the principles of these 25, each of which is its own idea and its own concept, one of the principles is the necessity to engage, and we spoke about this already, in Pnimius HaTorah. And again, you know, I don't say Hasidus per se. Many people Hasidus doesn't speak to, you know, many, many, many more people it does, but many people it doesn't, you know. So anything in Pnimius, anything that's going to talk about Hashem. What's that?
Yeah, you always have mussar
and
that's right. Others. That's right. That's right. Like, but even within Musar, you know, there were certain Musar Sfarim that took you deeper, that were more Hashem focused. You know, I speak about Nevi Shachaim often, you know, because it's founded on the Zohar Kaddish and on the revelation of Rashbi, of Shimon Bar Yochai, and the Arizal, which was a completely new Gilui, a new revelation within Avodas Hashem that many, many people do connect with, you know, and can similarly help a person in many, many ways. You know, to reframe a lot of Avodas Hashem. And so that's the 19th principle, is the necessity to engage in Pnimis HaTorah and how that's going to bring us to Mashiach and to a Mashiach consciousness and to really begin to prepare for Shabbos Kodesh. You know, now if all of history is split into 7 millennia, we're now in the 6th, right? And so if you do the Cheshbon, it turns out we're after Chatzos already. In the 6th millennia, if you do the Cheshbon and you figure out the hours and, you know, if the 7 millennia are 7 days, so within the 6th millennia, it's already after Chatzos, and we're getting ready for Shabbos. You know, we're getting ready to reunite with the Malka, with Shabbos Malka, with the Bas Melech, with the princess. And so that's the 19th principle. So within that principle of the 25 principles, which are part of the 7-week course, which are founded on the book, that's where the WhatsApp broadcast and status and you know and Instagram and Facebook and social media comes in to be able to try to help people on a daily level and on a daily pace, day to day, consistently connect with Chassidus and Pnimis HaTorah. So we have a bunch of different quote series. The ikar of what we're trying to accomplish is our Chassidus daily series. So every single day we send out another quote from one of the Sfarim, but we do each sefer at a time. So we did the whole Kedushas Levi, going from beginning to end and pulling out all the independent, very powerful, fundamental Hasidic ideas. Now we're doing Ma'ariv Nayim next. We'll see what we're going to do. I don't know yet, but there are many, many thousands of options, Baruch Hashem. And twice a week, we invite Mashpiyim, those Rabbanim and musicians and educators and psychologists and therapists and anybody that's really connected to this movement and connected to this kind of vision, and it really gets it, you know, his fingers on the pulse of our nation and understands and sees the direction in which our youth are headed and what they need to hear and what their neshamas are yearning for. So we have those mashpiyim in order to give them a platform twice a week, giving mini shiurim on two of the quotes out of the 6 quotes a week. So, you know, that's our video series. We send out a little bit less frequently, especially more recently, but we've been sending out videos from Rebbetzins as well and other, you know, women teachers to special women's lists. And that's the ikar, you know, is these quotes, is the videos. And then there's obviously content from our website as well. So the website took months and months to develop. It's really something special. There's a lot of different resources on there. Like I said, written and audio and a lot of articles and a lot of, you know, all the videos, Parsha Shirim, all the different programs that we run are all wrapped into the website. That's like the ikar. That's the main place to go. If you're interested in finding out anything more, we have articles about this Hashkafa, about the movement from Rabbi Weinberger, my Rebbe, or Moshe Weinberger, Shlita from Woodmere, from Ish Kodesh, who many see as like the captain, you know, of this ship. You know, and the general leader, you know, the senior leader of this kind of Ashkafa. And so his articles are on there talking about what this is all about. And obviously you can purchase the book, you can sign up for the course, you can watch all the videos, you can hear all the shiurim, you know, but that's a little bit of what we're trying to accomplish. And we have many amazing programs planned for the future and future books, you know, that are all wrapped up into this 19th principle, to try to share Pnimis HaTorah and to create a platform and a voice for all of those that felt like they were part of a silent revolution, that, you know, they just felt marginalized, and they felt as if the mainstream community isn't paying attention. It isn't aware, you know, of what's out there and what's going on and what the kids are discovering and what this young generation of grassroots leaders, you know, are really putting together. I just decided, and I felt deeply in my heart, that it was time to put together a platform for us, you know, and to really pull the money together. Obviously the financial backing is super important to be able to do all of this, which Chazi Hashem, you know, people are opening their hearts and people are really opening their minds to really dream of something different and to be able to really become the portal, you know, for anybody who's interested in finding out anything about this, that this should bring them in a very healthy, normal, balanced way, directly into the center without, you know, any revolutions, you know, through the sides and, you know, trap doors and through the basement, just directly in, to be able to give it to them clearly in a beautiful, professional, aesthetically beautiful way. and an intellectually sound and eloquent and deep way, you know, the way that our generation needs to hear it.
Mayor, you go for it.
We see that all your answers to all your questions are really, as a certain mentor of mine says, pregnant with meaning. And so we're trying to veer to what our official last question is. And we knew this one would be a doozy here. What's your favorite quote and why?
What is my favorite quote and why? That's a good one, and it's a good deal with this. Right. I mean, it's part of my daily business is quotes. You know, I deal with like hundreds of quotes a month. But what's my favorite quote? It's an especially good one because I don't even think that I noticed this one when you sent me the question. So I don't really have anything off the top of my mind. There are so many. There are so many. Mamish, there are so many. You know, what I think is the most, I would say the most impactful, just off the top of my head, is a pasuk in Tehillim. Where I don't know if that counts as a quote. I assume it does. We can quote David HaMelech, right?
Mayor, actually, in the first episode, we talked about our favorite quotes, Mayor's favorite quote, and he also gave a pasuk.
Okay. Baruch Hashem. So I'm in good hands.
Yeah.
I'm walking in good footsteps. So David HaMelech says in this pasuk, he says, "Im esak shamayim sham ata." This is not, you know, one of those famous psukim you'll find in a song. Not yet, at least. But David HaMelech says,
it is a song. I think Harold Tal sings a song like this.
Really?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I would love to hear it. I think you'll say Cardinal also sings. But I'm saying, but you're not going to hear this by a wedding.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear this by a wedding. Hopefully one day. But David HaMelech says, "Esak shamayim sham ata. If I rise to heaven, there you are. Ba'atzia sha'ol. But if I sink to the deepest depths of hell, of Gehenna, Hineka, you're with me." And Rabbi Nachman in Torah Vav, in the sixth lesson in the Likutei Moran, explains the depth of this pasuk and why it's so meaningful and it's so essential, you know, to a healthy engagement with Avodas Hashem, is that every Jew needs to have two modes. Every Jew needs to have two different paths that enable him to find the strength at every single moment in life to move forward. One of those paths, one of those modes, and one of those what's called an expertise is called baki d'ratzo, which means to be an expert in running. Running, not physically, doesn't mean you should be a marathon runner, you know, but an expert in running spiritually, to be able to be connected at a time when things are going well for you, and at a time when we have an aliyah, and at a time when the world, you know, is bright and the sun is shining, and you're feeling good about yourself, and you're having success, and the things you're trying to work on are working out, etc. So the expertise there is not to become complacent, is not to settle, is not to be satisfied with what you've managed to accomplish, but baki b'ratzo. A person has to be an expert in always doing more, in running and finding the way of always remaining humble, no matter how much a person is able to do, and realize there's so much more to know, and there's so much more to see, and there's so much more to experience, and there's so many deeper levels that are beyond where you're holding. And that's wrapped up into the beginning of the pasuk in Esak Shamayim, David says, even if I reach heaven, which means even if I get to a very lofty spiritual level, still, sham ata, we're able to realize that God is still further. And that no matter how close we're going to go, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because he wants to teach us how to walk, is crouching a little bit further away so we can toddle toward him just a little bit more, right? And that's an infinite, everlasting project, you know, to be able to grasp HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is infinite. And so there are infinite levels in our conception and our understanding and our comprehension of who he is, just how much he loves us, just how much he wants us and desires us and needs us in a certain very deep way. But the other expertise is called baki b'shov, which means to be an expert in returning. And this expertise is the opposite of the expertise of baki b'ratzo, because baki b'ratzo means that even if I'm doing so great, I need to know that I'm not there yet, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still sham ata, and I have to still try my best to pick myself up no matter what, no matter how well I'm doing, and to continue to encourage myself not to settle and not to become complacent. But the opposite, baki b'shov, is to realize that even if I fall to the lowest depth of hell, Hineka, the master of the world, is right next to me, and that he's holding me, And that tshuva, which is sometimes described in the Svarim as such an arduous, difficult process, in a certain way is the easiest thing. It's the easiest thing because you're always essentially close to Hashem in a spiritual sense, in an essential soul level. You have a chelik alukami mal within you. And so Hashem is with you all the time. And if you're breathing and if you're living, like the Pasuk says, not simply that those of you who are living today, you are connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you know, if you're connected, then you're really living, v'chule. But the Ma'ar Naim says very simply, the Chenabler, he says, you know the biggest proof that you're connected to God? The biggest proof that you're always connected is because you're alive. And if you're alive, that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with you. That means that he's consciously pumping you with energy, enormous amounts of energy to give you life and to give you the capacity and the ability to create and to grow and to pick yourself up, that there's no despair in the world. Hineka, Master of the world, you're with me, right next to me. And from my place, from the lowest depth of spiritual hell and difficulty and struggle and suffering and lowliness, I can pick myself up. And that's the end of the pasuk. V'atzia sha'ol, even when I sink to the lowest level, still hineka, you're with me. This is also connected to what the malachim say, ayin kain kavayda, those spiritual beings on such a lofty plane that you would think that they're there, right? They've reached that goal. They're dafka, the one saying aye, because they always need to rise higher. Where is the place of God? We're not there yet. But what do we lowly humans need to remind ourselves all the time? Ayin kain kavodo is malach ala aretz kavodo. Hashem is with us. He's filling us. He's surrounding us, he's holding us, he's embracing us. And when a Jew can connect to both of these approaches, so that no matter how you know, things are going for you, no matter if you're in a Shas Aliyah and things are going well, or a Shas Yerida, and both of these things are going to happen, that's just natural. We don't like to talk about it so much in yeshiva. You know, again, you know, growing up, it was like Judaism is defined by those times of up, by those times of success, by the learning and the davening and the shuckling and the doing what I'm supposed to do. And then when I'm not doing that, it's not Yiddishkeit. I'm out of it. I'm out of it. I'm burnt out, or I'm not in the mood, or I'm not holding. And I'll get back to Avodas Hashem when I get back. Or Rabbi Nachman, you know, in this teaching, if I see this generally speaking, redefines, you know, the boundaries of our Avodas Hashem to include every aspect of life, the good days and the bad days, the summers and the winters. And, you know, no matter how it's going for you, no matter what stage or what age or what phase, to be able to realize this is also part of Avodas Hashem. This is also part of it. This is part of the challenge of living, to be able to find Hashem in my experience and to be able to utilize every circumstance and situation to be able to grow closer to him. So this is Baki Baratzo, Baki B'Shoev. And if we remember this pasuk and we, you know, we become fluent with it, so we can remind ourselves, and no matter what's going on, we can find the strength to continue to grow when things are going well, and we can find the strength to pick ourselves up when things are not going too well, or wow, the way that we want.
So powerful, and as well, it also happens to somewhat fit with the tune of how the LPI has been in the past few days, and the quotes, it's been relatively similar to this.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right, that Hashem is with us. And that's the main thing to know. And it sounds cliche and it sounds stupid, you know, but when you're having that crisis of faith, you know, and when things are dark, and we all have those moments, and we shouldn't delude ourselves. And that's also why Hasidus is so popular today, is because people are real. They're more real than ever before. We're so sincere. We're so fed up with the nonsense, you know, and the external facades and the pretending. We're so honest, our generation, particularly the young people, so real, you know, and we're searching for something that speaks to that, to that commitment to reality, that commitment to sincerity, to openness, to admitting our faults, and to realizing that we need a system that's going to work for those that fall, in, you know, in the same way that it works for those that are perpetually rising. And Ezer Hashem, we should be zoche, you know, to see the continued rising of the sun, like the Medrash says, that the sun of Mashiach rises slowly, kima, kima, very, very slowly. And that's how Mashiach comes to the world. You know, many people think Mashiach comes as an individual and things change, redeems the whole world, done, from one moment to the next. There's truth to that. But in Chassidus, you know, Rav Kook speaks a lot about this also, is that it's a long process that really culminates in the arrival of Mashiach, which is what the Medrash is hinting to us, right? Because the dawn begins just with light that illuminates the world long before the actual orb, you know, the actual sun, that ball arises, or, you know, above the horizon. You know, and so, yeah, I'm with you.
We could still be holding my Mishiyakir.
Mishiyakir, right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think we're past that. I think we're past that. I think that, you know, even without the words Hasidus, you know, or even without the actual Sfarim, just think of the impact, you know, just on a musical, simple level, on a basic societal level, that Avram Fried, who's Chabad, and Mordechai Ben David, who's aligned more with Breslev, respectively, have had, you know, on the general consciousness, just on a basic, basic level. Nobody thinks of them as, you know, Hasidic missionaries. You know, they're just the performers, more recently, you know, but the lyrics and the tunes, right, have had a tremendous impact. Joey Newcomb, for example, Reb Joey Newcomb, a good friend of mine, what he's doing, you know, it's the most undercover, you know, what we call hafatza, you know, spreading of the wellsprings of the Baal Shem HaKadosh. It's happening. It's the impact of Hasidus is immeasurable. Judaism would look, even the most litvish sectors of Judaism would look immeasurably different, you know, without the very subtle impact that Hasidus has made on the Jewish nation. And our consciousness, and I do believe that this is the dawn of Mashiach that will ultimately culminate in that Redeemer, you know, who will come to the world and finish the process of giving us das, of giving us the ability to really come to this place of da esaleke avicha, and then of deyu. But the first thing is to get to know who it is that we're serving, and to think about him deeply the whole day, to speak to him in our own language, and to try to get to know him in order then of deyu to, you know, to go about the task of serving him.
Wow, that's, and I think also one a mile specifically about the LPI is can be seen from what you just did, that you took a pasuk in Tehillim and made it so like accessible. That's one thing that I've felt that I wanted to kind of thank you that in the kind of the ideas of Hasidus, while it's so attractive, is sometimes feels like lofty and hard to access. And right. In the daily quotes and videos that Ivan Mayer actually introduced me to Lost Princess Initiative a couple months ago.
Nice.
And beautiful. When I started to see like these quotes in these videos, it was like so accessible and so real and relevant to day-to-day life. And like, it was like a beautiful like translation of those like lofty ideals into like practicality. And
that's exactly it. That's exactly it. And that's really the bulk of the work now. You know, Baruch Hashem, we have, like I mentioned before, thousands and thousands and thousands of pages. You know, but the ikkar is now, you know, how do we communicate that? How do we bring that down, so to speak, you know, on such a level that we can give people a little bit, you know, of a footstool, you know, in order to climb up so that they can, you know, hit the tarmac and get into the air themselves. You know, how do we heat people up? How do we deliver these messages to ears that are so eager to listen, you know, but sometimes need to be spoken to in a special way, you know? And so personally, I think that part of my, you know, limited, you know, but reach, you know, and success so far in trying to do this is specifically because I look the way I look, you know, which is just a regular guy like everybody else. And because of my background, having gone through the yeshivas, I'm not, you know, an outsider, so to speak, that's coming in and saying, okay, we have to fix this, we have to fix that. I'm just like everybody else, you know. I don't define myself, you know, in any external sense is different. I daven in a regular shul like everybody else, et cetera, you know. And because of my intimate familiarity with the community, you know, and having learned in the mirror and having learned in these regular mainstream, you know, centrist or right, you know, wing yeshivas, I think that it's able to have this impact, you know, and I think embodies the message of quality, that it's not about the externalities, that it's not about all of the, you know, the trappings that come along with it, which again, I'm not against, you know, but that's not the ikkar. That's not the ikkar. And I think that can have an impact, you know, and that can really enable people to be open to it, to say, okay, this guy looks like me. This guy, you know, speaks like me. He has the same, you know, background as me and went to many of the similar yeshivas as me. And let me hear what he has to say, you know, and Baruch Hashem, there are people who are listening. There are people who are listening.
Chazi Hashem. Wow. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. It's always good to review, you know, the essence of my of my being and my life mission. It's always wonderful to speak about.
A few things to end off with is, number one, I want to correct myself. I believe that the singer who sang the song I was referring to was Yisrael Dagan.
Yeah, that makes sense. It was a Breslover chassid.
Yeah. Also, I'd like to add, I was discussing with Itzhak, we knew that this episode would go long. We wanted to. I wasn't sure if we'd end up cutting it into two parts. I realized this episode, you see, really, it connects the entire thing together. So we're going to leave it and see it. If you want to decide to listen to only half at one point, half at the other, but okay. If
any listener who's going to be listening to the beginning is going to be drawn in. This is, I'm sitting exactly. here listening and wow, this is so like.
It's like us just listening for like the entire podcast. I felt like I'm like listening to someone else's podcast. You hear like your whole story. It's beautiful.
Thank you guys for the opportunity.
Thanks. Okay, thank you so much for joining us for this interview. It was a tremendously uplifting and inspiring interview. I think something that all of you will definitely have enjoyed if you're still here at the end. So thank you so much for joining us. And tune in next time for the next Mayor's Name podcast. Hopefully we'll be able to rival the amount of inspiration we had this time. If you'd like to join the status, drive a recommendation for a guest, or have any other comments, what's up 315-504-5101 or email mayorsmemes@gmail.com. Thank you so much for joining.
And for anyone that's going to be giving me some flack and giving me and Mayor some flack, oh, you said 15 minutes. We do normally try to keep it short, but...
You can't avoid it.
You can't cut short meaning and inspiration like that. So we have to let it keep going. We weren't going to cut it short, and it was amazing. I think it was for sure worth it.
Amazing. Thank you very much for joining.